What would we do, you know? What would you guys do? I've got a couple ideas. Obviously, one of them that springs to mind would be to distribute the cash.
I'd go one step further, JD. I would restart the sale process on both Atlantic and Simberi.
Literally get them off your books.
Get rid of them. Like, just get rid of them. You're in Australia. The assets are overseas. You don't have a competitive advantage running these. Like, you don't. Get rid of them both. Whatever cash you've got, distribute it all of it to shareholders. Distribute the shares that you do own in specie, distribute them to shareholders and wind yourself up. Go.
Just shut the door.
Shut the door.
Go away.
End the story of St. Barbara existing.
G'day, money miners. Welcome to another week, 10th of July 2023. And wonder, I reckon everyone by that click-through rate, JD, everyone enjoyed your Hooteroo Herald on Saturday, mate.
And it was a team effort, but yeah, the numbers were looking good, so keep signing up, money miners.
And I know the email addresses that unsubscribe, so I have the ability to abuse you. I know who you are. There was some corporate people that surprised me too. There wasn't many, but yeah, considering I did spam them with my old email list. So, Trav Ricciardo.
Hey, hang on, mate. The link's in the description. Hooteroo Herald. Sign up, guys. It's JD puts a lot of effort into it. You got to tell him where to click, mate.
Bloody sensational. It's in the description. Bloody the Hooteroo Herald out every Saturday morning. It's nothing better than starting the weekend with an edition of the Hooteroo Herald. It's got all our top tweets of the week, the episode links, a bit of general chat. It's bloody brilliant.
Also in the description is a link to the Hooteroo group chat, mate.
And the Money Miners group. Join the Money Miners Facebook group to get access to the Hooteroo chat group.
So I saw there's over 400 in there now, which is 400 highly engaged, you know, mining market participants who are sort of sharing their investment theses with everyone and sense checking their thinking. It's kind of, you know, crowdsourcing investing in the space, mate. I love it.
Apologies to Eric Samuel. I think we've taken over Ride the Wave as the go-to share market chat group.
I've got one more call out, fellas. Pendulum. They haven't replied.
Oh, yeah, we haven't. Pendulum haven't replied, so we can use the ABC remix
for our intro. I know you're out there listening. Just give us the all clear and we'll start using it.
Righty-o. Boys, mate, JD, have you got a direct line with the government at the moment? I see.
Mate, they do try and get in touch here and there, but we're pretty busy here at Money of Mine. But we can tell they've been watching, can't we?
Oh, well, after your little nuclear uranium deep dive, Peter Dutton was on the telly promoting the need for nuclear.
Yeah, exactly. He's
gone to... Bit of a coincidence, JD, or what, mate?
Yeah, just going to all the, you know, old stream, mainstream media promoting the need for a nuclear renaissance. So
Shout out to Peter Dutton. Use our link for the YouTube, mate, if you want a good look overview to talk to all the stakeholders about the need for nuclear. Money of Mine is your go-to place. Boys, let's get into it. We're going deep dives today. I guess St. Barbara can't get away from us.
No, they can't.
JD's got a contrarian view he wants to share with the money miners on this one. No big news. Value opportunity, mate.
No news on the front, but just something to unpack. What else? E25?
E25, yeah.
Manganese demand. Yeah.
We've been hounded to
finally. Is it a deep dive or just an initial scrape of it?
I think it's, somewhere in between the two. You know, we've been... This is one of the elements of the Hooteroo group chat. We've had one of the money miners hammering me, Trav, when are you going to do E25? When are you going to do E25? And you know what? I give in. I will be persuaded by the money miners, mate. I won't accept a fee for coverage, but if you hammer me long enough and the company's, you know, doing something development or production related, we'll talk about you eventually.
I wish you did take a fee for the coverage personally. But righto, boys, let's get into it. First up, Black Cat put out their Paulson's restart study update. So
not a feasibility?
Oh, it's just a restart plan. They did release their reserve. Prior to that, it was just a resource. So they put a reserve out. What do you think, boys?
Well, we were looking out for this one because you obviously put out your relatively, critical, it was a technical breakdown of why you were sceptical that a restart in the way that they were talking about it would be economically viable just based on the gabbro veins. They've come out with a restart plan. It looked like the gabbro veins in their restart plan the first 3 years only make up 35% of the initial ore. That was the basis of the major part of your critique. And the other element of your critique was around, you know, they're too skinny. They're going to use air legs for 8% of the mining. So there's a lot of the veins that they're going to mine with a jumbo. So
it's jumbo development to get in there, and then long hole open stoping, yeah. The actual stoping mining. Yeah.
And, so. And I looked out, they've used consultants for a lot of the parts of the study, you know, the plant refurb estimate, power, heritage, etc. But the actual mine planning, so, you know, the scheduling, the costing, all of that sort of stuff, which was the basis of your critique, they have done in-house.
So I guess you look at that as a positive for cost-wise, similar to what Capricorn do, to do as much in-house as possible, so paying for consultants, but then you do whether you get the same level as expertise as using a consultant, not to me, not unknown.
Yeah, I think there's a couple takeaways, isn't there, from that particular part of the job being done in-house? What did you sort of take away, Trev?
I think you can't leverage the established reputation of someone else in the industry saying that this is this area, which was the basis of Maddie's critique, is viable. You kind of just have to keep trusting them on that one.
Yeah. So for those that didn't see this one...
They did get GR to do the plant and all that. So.
Yeah. But you weren't... Your critique wasn't oriented on the ability to refurb a plant.
Well, you look at what they converted. So their initial mineral resource they put out was 328,000 ounces at 9.9 grams. And then obviously our previous episode went into, you know, the conversion of that into reserve when you've got very thin ore bodies is not going to be anywhere near that 9.9 grams. So the reserve they've put out is 87,000 ounces, so a bit over a quarter at 4.4 grams gold.
Not far off what your guess was, right, from my memory.
Yeah, I think that was probably at the higher end. But my sort of conversion was looking at specifically the gabbro veins, which only make 35%. So that's where the really thin parts of the ore body are. So, and that's the reserve they've put out is 64% of their production target. So they're anticipating they're going to convert more resources into reserves, into the mine plan. So they're saying they're going to get, revenue of 355 mil, operating cash flow after all that of 81 million for a three-year mine plan. So their initial mine production target is 136,000 ounces at 4.2 grams. So look, there's that head grade is obviously dependent on the stoping dilution, because when you're mining these very thin ore bodies, controlling that dilution, they've set a minimum mining width, which is the stope width, of 2.5 meters. So it's controlling it to get to that point and the grade reconciling and delivering on it. So it's obviously still a bit of a risk. One confusing bit I found was with the jumbo development. It says they were considering for their ore drive dimensions 4.2 by 4.2 metres. So that's using 420s and 421 jumbos. But then it goes down and says the new development for the ore drives will be going in at 4 metres by 4 metres using 2.4 metre split sets. So, yeah, a bit...
What is that?
Well, the 2.4 metre split sets to install that, once you put the bolt on the jumbo, the whole distance of the rail is about 4.7 metres. So trying to get a 4.7 metre boom and bolt into a 4 metre high and wide drive is not really possible.
So it's on an angle the whole time.
On an angle, and then that you obviously don't have the integrity of the support. It's pretty good ground at Paulson, so it's not that much of a thing. But the actual practicality of it isn't really possible. You can shorten the dolly and do little funky things like that, but it does make it pretty difficult. So that
what's the whole restart gonna cost them there?
Well, they put in, so the headline was 34.3 million for total capital expenditure, but then they've got another 8 million of pre-production operating costs. So that's the pre-production mining, the pre-production processing costs, like the ramp-up costs, and then site overhead. So it says total pre-production expenditure of $42.3 million. So they said they're doing an owner-operator model. They're dry hiring the equipment. So they're not buying the equipment, but they're going to hire it.
Okay,
so
they won't
own it. They're not using a contractor. It says they're going to be owner-operating, but they're going to, hire.
Yeah, I mean, the key takeaway is when you hear owner-operator are higher upfront sort of cost and then lower operating costs, but given that they'll hire, that'll sort of see them through to hopefully a bit of cash flow.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Waiting. It says that the interesting part was they said they were waiting for final investment decision, but they've got term sheets already with lenders. So, which is, it's like, well, do they have the finance and they're waiting on the decision from themselves, or?
The way lenders normally work in this is they'll have a non-binding, non-binding term sheet subject to the DD, subject to the outcomes of the study. They just sort of can provide some indicative idea of what quantum and interest rate they can do before they really, you know, go into the weeds on it. I don't know how much they've been exposed to the data room so far, but yeah. Those like, you know, non-binding term sheets, some of them will convert to real offers, some of them won't.
And look, the big thing in this, if they do get mining and get a bit of cash flow in the door, it does open up the possibility for them to pump it into exploration and find that Paulson's repeat too. That's what they're there for. They're not, this isn't a company builder by any means, I don't think, but finding a Paulson's repeat offset, which is what they're chasing at depth, that's the kicker. Right, next up, boys, Kin.
Yeah, quick one, Matty. I just noticed that Andrew Monckton, the MD there, he's stepped down. So Rowan Johnson, he's joined Kin, and his role is as an executive chairman, so replacing the, I guess, you know, managing director role within that role itself too. I think there's not too much to say here other than I wonder if the leadership change actually facilitates consolidation. Remember, Kin wedged themselves into Dacian, probably hoping they'd get wrapped up by Genesis in the process. But instead, Genesis were apprehensive to do a deal there, and they're stuck with, not quite the full compulsory acquisition amount on Dacian there. But I wonder if new leadership means a deal can get done.
And what is Genesis? Genesis is the most only logical player for Kin, or would Kin be? Could they possibly be looking elsewhere? What's the play there? Are we only thinking Genesis could take them?
I think so.
It is the most logical, but...
Yeah.
St. Barbara have a slab of stock in...
unless someone wants to... unless Silver Lake want to take them and start playing more funny buggers with Genesis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Panoramic.
Oh, Panoramic. They've got the filter press.
The filter press saga is almost finished.
And look, you've seen the photo of them, all the processing crew. They took a photo of them because you can imagine how much they've been busting their ass to make this happen at all levels. So I guess good on them for delivering it, I think, before the initial delivery date. So sensational effort, I reckon.
Yeah, I think from Panoramic, when we first spoke about the company about a month ago, it's like a much better outcome. So I think a quote was that their filter press has successfully been repaired and recommissioned after the fabrication and installation of the new unit. So most importantly, concentrate is being produced, you know, mining is all going strong again. So in the announcement today, they didn't actually give an indication of what the cost could be, but obviously we're expecting a quarterly this month. And they did mention about a month ago when this issue first came to the surface that guidance could no longer be met and that their revised guidance for C1 cash costs, so those direct mining costs, was for between 13 and 13.50 Aussie. So remember, that's just obviously the direct cost. You've still got, you know, all in sustaining and, you know, all in cost beyond that, and the nickel price is only 14 odd dollars. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what it's sort of done to their cash position, and I'm sure we'll see that by the end of this month.
So I guess you'd hope it would set them up for a better year this year. You know, they're off to a bit. I know they're probably, what are we, the 10th? So they have lost 10 days, but
Panoramic, they came out with a new mine plan not too long ago, and we'll show the chart on YouTube, but you can see that these next couple of years were supposed to be significantly higher cost than the next 6, 7 or 8 years after that. So hopefully for the company's sake, they can see themselves through this and not have to dilute, and they can meet their, you know, service their debt. But it sort of all hangs in the balance. Obviously, they need a few things to go their way. They need the nickel price to hold up so that the mine can be mined profitably. We just sort of have to watch this space.
But good effort from them, I reckon, with still delivering paste during that time and processing the mineralised waste. And look, they were trying, I think they did have an intermediate filtering solution. And yeah, look, shit situation that this thing's gone down, but I think they've done pretty good to get what they can out of it during the time.
And yeah,
they've
for delivered sure.
it. So yeah, this is what happens with old plants, I guess. Just because someone's got a mill on their mind doesn't mean she's a sure thing that it's going to be easy to get back going.
So, yeah, I think they flagged when it first all happened that specific piece of equipment was 19 odd years old. So yeah. E25.
Oh, Trav, E25, educate me, sunshine.
Element 25 is there.
Have we spoken about manganese yet? I don't think we have.
I was quoting manganese in FEMGO, but it was supposed to be
magnesium.
Magnesium. So, yeah, I was wrongly referring to manganese. Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
Well, yeah, manganese is a critical mineral. Element 25, they're ASX listed. They're developing the Butcher Bird Manganese Project. It's a bit south of Newman there, Pilbara Ways. This is one that I've been following their news flow a little bit. I haven't felt the need to talk about it just yet. But yeah, as mentioned at the top of the show, there's a money miner in the Hoodoo group chat that's very keen to get our view on this one, Maddie. So I spent this morning, I guess, like brushing up, and there is a bit of news flow, which I'll touch on in relation to this company. But, you know, for now, what I just want to say is that Element 25, they're producing manganese concentrate at the moment from their Butcher Bird project. And this current stage is producing about 365,000 tonnes per annum from there. In the March quarter just gone, it had like a pretty cash neutral outcome for the company. So they're not really making money from it at the moment, but it's about what the growth plans are that could be attractive here.
So other manganese operations, I remember Woody, that's up. Well, I think that's North. That was another manganese operation used to be. You don't hear too much of it.
Yeah, no.
Any other ones off the top of your head?
Euromanganese EMM, I think, is another listed ASX player, obviously with their asset in Europe.
Yeah, I think manganese as a commodity is something that we're pretty interested in. I think in a future episode we'll go a bit deeper on the market and a bit deeper on the outlook. I think, you know, for this segment, I'm keen to talk about the company.
So what are the next stages that, you know, you obviously flagged that they're producing 365,000 tonnes per annum at the moment, but there's a growth story. What's sort of next?
And it's just a concentrate that they're producing at the moment. They're shipping it all to China. The exciting part of the story is this high purity manganese sulfate monohydroxide facility that their intentions are to develop in Louisiana in the United States. And this facility, obviously it's like a more downstream variant of the product. It will take the feedstock from the Bluebird mine and process it over there and get a higher purity sort of element come out of it. So the company, right? So E25, they're capped at 110 million Aussie and their share price has come off a long way since its peak in March 2021. It's down about 80%. But they did put out this feasibility study to build this high purity manganese sulfate monohydroxide or HPMSM facility in Louisiana back just a couple of months ago, and had the initial CapEx pegged at about $290 million there. That's just for one train, and then there'd be another $190 million for the second train. So you looked at the return numbers in this study, had a post-tax IRR of just 25%. It's a sort of return that doesn't get you super excited unless there are some concessional finance pools that you can tap on.
So what's the geography reasoning behind mining it over here, processing in America, access to the battery metals market over there?
So geopolitics, I think, is the right way to look at it. I mean, it's a bit funny because currently they're shipping everything to China. But if you start to look into the news flow that we've seen from the company recently, you know, you're seeing deals with big European and American automakers. So they're obviously seeing that this is a strategic asset and it's going to play into the electric vehicle manufacturing in the future.
So is the main one this is going towards is the NCM batteries, nickel cobalt manganese batteries. Is that what manganese is mostly used for? That's going to be the big driver. Is that why it's a critical mineral?
That's the why, Matty. There's the battery chemistry part is the exciting part for manganese. There's a bunch of alloys that you can do with it as well. So the 25% IRR on this thing. I always look at a 25% IRR.
Anything with a 2 in it and an IRR is not. She's a bit of a risky one, eh?
Yeah, you're just a bit underwhelmed, especially when the capex is high and you're a single asset developer. Because there's just so much variability on what that capex can actually turn out to be, especially in an inflationary environment.
So I think you said it before. So they're going to ship a concentrate all the way to USA to a downstream process over there.
At this facility that they want to build, right? It's not built yet. It's in Louisiana. And the funding partners that they're looking to introduce to build this facility are some of these automakers. So in January of this year, you saw E25. They came out with an announcement that Stellantis was coming in to provide funding on these terms. That Stellantis were going to tip in $30 million, consisting of $15 million equity and a $15 million prepay, which would ultimately be repaid from the product that comes out of the facility over 5 years.
And this is, I guess, for people that don't know Stellantis, I'll just read them here. So Stellantis is the owner of Jeep, Alfa Romeo, Citroen, Peugeot, Maserati, Dodge. So they're pretty bloody big.
They've kind of taken a bit of a spray and pray approach in their investments in a lot of the battery metals things. They're kind of spreading themselves in the equity of a lot of different juniors. I don't know if they're doing heaps of work in their investment approach, but the brand adds weight, right? And it helps you finance things.
Seems like they're throwing the money around as a throwing a few darts.
Yeah, it's a free option. I mean, they get some offtakes in the process, which is security of supply is like the key thing they're all trying to lock in, right?
Amongst all those brands, Fiat is the main one where Stellantis comes from.
Yeah.
Fiat gobbled all the others up.
Ah, righto.
So this $30 million that Stellantis agreed to tip in, the funding, it was conditional on quite a few different conditions or CPs, right? Nonetheless, E25, they held an EGM or an extraordinary general meeting in March to approve the issue of shares to Stellantis, which remains still subject to the completion of some of those conditions. The original expiry date for the completion of these conditions, before the financing, the initial tranche was okay, was the 30th of April. But as announced on the 1st of May, Element 25, they pushed it back to the 30th of June because they were still working through completing some of the conditions. The key reason was the key condition that still needed to be met was E25 securing US $100 million of project finance. At this, at that point in time, the project finance piece wasn't put together yet. So on the 26th of June, E25, they came out with an agreement with GM, General Motors, right?
So Trav, I think I read in the last month that GM came in. I think off the top of my head, it was US 85 that they came in for.
Yeah, US $85 million loan. And it was to be provided to E25 to build that facility in Louisiana as a senior secured lender. It would be a 7-year term, but it also wrapped into it a 7-year offtake, which would ensure GM got up to 32,500 tons per annum of the final product out of the facility.
And was there any sort of details given on the rate?
The interest rate, they stayed quiet, right? They just called the interest rate commercial terms normal for a facility of this type. So no specifics on the interest rate there, unfortunately.
Of course.
Now, what's the news flow right now? Well, E25, they remain in a trading halt. They announced that they got a waiver. They just got a waiver from ASX because the shareholder approval that they received in March to issue the shares to Stellantis required them to issue those shares within 3 months of the approval. And so that expired on the 20th of June. So remember, the holdup back then was actually satisfying the CPs to Stellantis, the project finance, the $100 million project finance. So in this waiver that came out today, we can see that E25, they're about to issue 22.6 million shares to Stellantis, and they say by tomorrow at the latest. Those 22.6 million shares have a market value today of about US 8.4 million. And you might be wondering, like, how is it only 8.4 million when the Stellantis agreement was for $15 million in tranche one of equity? It's because the agreement with Stellantis was at a minimum issue price of Aussie dollars $1 per share.
Right, so how, once all this goes through, Trav, how much have they actually got to spend on the facility, and where are they getting that from?
Yeah, and that's the question, right? When you look ahead, so they've got to spend $290 million to build this facility in Louisiana, and so $30 million from Stellantis, $85 million in the project finance there from GM. They've got about $25 million of cash right now, so that leaves about a $150 million funding gap. And they're going to have to plug that with subordinated debt to GM's debt and plus new equity. It is worth mentioning that they do have this $30 million Aussie at the money equity facility, which are these funky little...
So it's not like an ATM, like, not like a physical ATM at no, the money, right?
No, there are these... Yeah, like, we're going to have to get someone on to explain these in a certain way. I've seen a few of them pop up recently, but... They basically just ensure that equity markets can be available to a company when needed at a, you know, predefined discount, et cetera. Yeah, so if equity markets go to shit, they can still actually have the ability to do a placement with a certain party. You pay for the ability to do that, right? But I've seen a few of them pop up now that equity markets are a bit tougher than they used to be.
Okay, so you mentioned 32,500 tons per annum of the final product going to be given to GM as a part of their 7-year offtake.
Yeah.
And then obviously Stellantis are involved. Are they going to look for any other offtakers do they have capacity to sign any more offtakes? I mean,
yeah. Well, you look at what like the production profile is going to be out of this Louisiana facility. It's only going to be with the first train, 65,000 tons per annum, and 10,000 tons of that is going to go to Stellantis because they had an offtake agreement as well, 32.5 to GM, like you said. So that leaves 22,500 tons per annum uncontracted at the moment. But in their feasibility study, they did signal that 10,000 tons of that could go to another offtake party, but they'll retain 12,500 tons to sell into the spot market. I know this was just a bit of an overlook at what they're up to at the moment, but I do have some takeaways, fellas, from the bit of investigating that I did here. And I'm keen to talk to you about what those takeaways are.
Even though it was a light brush through, Trav, it's very educational on something I had no bloody idea of. So, mate, congratulations in advance. Right, takeaways. What are they?
I've got a couple. All right, my first takeaway is that the feasibility study is way too light for my liking. A 27-page ASX announcement doesn't cut it as far as I'm concerned. Note that both Stellantis and GM's agreement are conditional on them okaying the feasibility study as a CP in their respective agreement. So maybe
what CP stand for again?
Condition precedent. So something condition you have precedent. To satisfy yep. before the offer is completed. So,
and what about the rates? Like, I mean, how do you feel in general about companies coming out saying they've secured financing through debt and they haven't told investors what the rates they're going to be paying are?
Yeah, I don't like it. I think you got to tell me the interest rate to the debt and be more specific about the pricing mechanisms of the offtake as well. If you're looking at such a high proportion of the offtake being contracted here, you can't. The economics matter in these situations. So.
100%. If you're going to model the company and what they're going to potentially earn in the future, but they've got an agreement in place that, you know, they might be selling at a discount or something like that, you've just got to know as an investor, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. They're a bit vague other than saying that one of the offtakes is cost plus and the other one's a formula, but you sort of just need a bit more colour here. So
what about the – they seem to be going to be in that same position that so many companies are in. They've got these investors for a portion. They've got this big CapEx. They've got this massive funding gap, but where are they going to get that funding gap from? So what did you say it was? $150 million US funding gap?
It's pretty chunky, right? And to fund that funding gap as a $100 million market cap company is pretty tricky. I think they'll need a good lick of both debt and equity to get there, and that extra debt is going to need to be at a higher interest rate than the General Motors senior facility, because any further debt, it's said, will be subordinated. So, and just,
What's that mean, Trav?
It means you're lower in the preference stack. If things go tits up, GM get first claim, and then it depends how much you can sell everything for in a liquidation or sale process, but then subordinated debt gets looked after next, and then equity
And that's to protect GM. Equity.
Yeah. Exactly.
And just on the funding gap, US 150 million is the gap, and you said 100 million market cap. That market cap is Aussie. So
yeah, that'll go up when they issue these shares to Stellantis, but you just ballpark numbers. It's tricky, right?
Yeah.
Having said that, there are these incentives in the US, and maybe there'll be other like pools of capital that become available by virtue of these like geopolitical dynamics that are happening to commodity markets at the moment. It's worth mentioning like their current operation is like cash neutral. So there's not too much to be excited about there. And I wouldn't make a case that you can use, you know, cash flow from operations as a funding lever to really move the dial here. A couple more takeaways I have is I don't like seeing options being issued to non-related parties performing work associated with the development of the HP MSM project. Like we can see in the notice of EGM that went out in February where 2 million oppies were disclosed to be issued there.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and the last thing I'll just say is, like, I like the thematic. I like the commodity and playing into the IRA tailwinds that are happening. I'm just not 100% convinced that this company is the way that I would want to express exposure to that thematic.
Yeah, that IRA point I find could be massive. You know, we saw Piedmont come out a month or two ago and they got a tax break and I think US 140 million from memory in financing for a downstream facility in North Carolina. And I mean, I can't see these guys getting the same amount, but there is potential for, you know, given that it's a critical mineral and this is what part of the IRA is designed to, you know, achieve, that they could get some sort of financing here. I'm sure the company's pursuing that in whichever way they can.
Yeah. So JD, I've been talking to you a bit this morning about your contrarian look at St. Barbara right now. I thought we'll finish talking about this bloody company.
Well, Ito, I was just looking then at the manganese price, which I found interesting. It's like pretty much been flat for the last 3 years. So
I dare say with such a like a low volume traded market that a lot of it's done on contracts and not done on the spot price.
Yeah, and it said like the price has been the same for a very extended period because it's all just on what those contracts are. So it's
wouldn't be traded like gold, you know.
Very interesting. Right. Oh, the contrarian time. Big JD. Sorry to cut you off there, Trevor.
All good, mate.
I'll get on Google every now and then while we're talking.
I thought you were having a vape.
No, I was actually contributing.
So St. Barb's, gents, we have spoken ad nauseum about this company over the past 3 months. And I don't know what came across me, but I thought it was time to take another look and, you know, decide whether this company was potentially investable. So
with 300 million cash in the bank for a little bit.
Yeah, there's a bit long. More than meets the eye to that 300 odd million cash, but we'll get into it. So the market cap right now is roughly 230 million and they're trading at about 28 cents. So people might think, hey, it's come off a heap, but that obviously incorporates that a large sort of swab of that went out as an in-specie distribution in the form of Genesis shares to St. Barbara shareholders.
So shareholders now have the St. Barbara shares they initially had, but the value's gone down, but they've been given Genesis shares as part of the transaction.
Exactly. So I think they got one Genesis share for every four St. Barbara shares that they held.
Just ding, ding, ding on this one, guys. I still own St. Barbara and now Genesis too.
How long is this little segment to sort of a bit of financial advice to Travis maybe?
Oh, we're not in the business of financial advice.
Can we provide it
between
to each
friends.
Other?
So the company's been on a roadshow. They released a presentation. Management has gone to the East Coast and, you know, pitching to institutions what they're all about, you know, what the new message is given that the Gwalia assets have finally been sold. And like I said, their ex-bonus issue tomorrow is when as of the 4th of July, the St. Barbara holders will receive their Genesis stock. So like you said, Maddie, almost 300 million. They got 294 million in cash at the end of financial year 23, so a few days ago.
This is the reason you want to take a look at it, right? Because you see the cash balance and then you see the market cap and you're like, wait, what?
You've got to, you know, look into that a bit more, don't you?
Yeah.
So let's try and peel that back and do a bit of an EV calc. So the company flags 12 million in transaction costs, all the hard workers associated with that lengthy transaction, another 33 million in tax, and then there's $47 million in a environmental bond. So I'm going to be a bit conservative here. It's not completely clear how to treat that environmental bond, but I'm going to remove it.
Because you can technically get it back.
You can, yeah.
Yeah.
But the environmental liability is one that is the regulator going to be sure you can actually like fund yourself. So that it might be the case that that's the kind of liability where you need to keep it cash backed, and in the end that cash actually has to be used to clean up the liability there.
So hypothetically, if they sold that asset, they would the purchaser would take would then pay that bond for them and they'd get that bond back.
It depends how much what offers you get for it, right? Maybe some parties
might have to pay someone to take it.
Yeah, I reckon some parties might actually just say happy to buy it off you, but you got to keep your cash there as the backing.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be a key talking point as a part of any transaction there. So being conservative, we're going to subtract it. So that leaves you with a bit over $200 million in cash. Now, you have the listed investments of the company, as I think we touched on before, roughly $20 million. They had the Peel shares, Kin shares.
Catalyst shares.
Catalyst shares. So that equates to roughly $20 million. And then they've got a small portfolio of royalties, which we're going to be, conservative and attribute no value to. I think the company has flagged that they're looking to offload this, so hopefully they can get a bit of money in the door. Now, when we'd spoken about the company last, they were in a bit of a tricky debt situation. That is now not in the equation anymore. They've paid that all off, and that is before that $294 million, so that doesn't need to be a part of the equation anymore. So roughly, you get an enterprise value of zero.
So, and the enterprise value is if you take away cash and debt, what is the value of the business's assets?
Yeah, in simple terms, market cap plus debt minus the cash. And then obviously we talked about the listed investments there
so
as well.
So the market's ascribing zero value for, Symbariont and Atlantic effectively.
Yeah.
So zero value for everything other than their cash.
Exactly. So that's why we need to dig in a bit more. And there's something else to mention. They've got new management. So Andrew Strahlein is the new MD and CEO. Now he's come internally into the company. He's been head of BD in the past. They've also got a new CFO, Ms. Sarah Prendergast. She's also come internally from within the organization. And I can't help but look at this as somewhat of a con. The company talks about wanting to refresh the culture and they want to establish an identity focused on value. And I just think it's really hard to do that with the same people that have been there for quite a while. I mean, there is thousands of books about corporate culture out there. And I think a lot of them will say it's pretty hard to change the culture within an organization. And it's in particularly hard if you're keeping a lot of the same people. So it might be perhaps a bit harsh on the guys running the show there. Maybe we should cut them a bit of slack now that they're in the driving seat. But yeah, that's just how I view that at the moment.
I suppose they brought Dan Locker in as a new person outside the company, but he's obviously left now. So back to the originals.
Yeah, exactly. So back onto the value of those assets. Now, let's start with Symbariont. So this is their asset, obviously, in your favourite jurisdiction, Maddie, Papua New Guinea.
Mm.
So a quick update
on
it. They're easy to operate there. So they're mining the oxide ore, which is what the mill's been designed for, and they're going to be doing that until FY26. They're also then going to revisit the sulfide expansion that, over the next few years, and then planning, hopefully before FY28, a, final investment decision on what they're going to do with the sulfide, whether they're going to have to sink some capex into it, redesign the mill, and crack on with a few more years of mine life. So this particular asset had guidance of 70 to 80,000 ounces for FY23.
And so that's all, what did you say, planning for final investment decision by FY28?
Yeah, so they're going to revisit the sulfide expansion before FY26, but that's obviously still 3 years away.
Yep.
Now, Atlantic, the Canadian asset we touched on before. So they're no longer actually really mining there. They're treating the stockpiles for roughly the next 18 months. They've got no permits at that particularly troubled asset to Koi. And that's going to go on care and maintenance at the end of next year. And you sort of think from that, mining the stockpiles, that should imply decent cash flow. So 5.4 million tonnes at 0.5 or half a gram per tonne means there's 80,000 ounces in stockpiles there. But I mean, you look at what the all-in sustaining cost was for the last quarter, and that's when they were already purely treating the stockpiles. and the all-in sustaining cost was 2,000 Aussie dollars. So
wow.
You've got to add on a bit for to get to the real, you know, reflection of what the costs are. So I can't really wrap my head around how mining stockpiles can be so expensive.
Suppose if it's half a gram, possibly, just because the grade is so low.
Yeah. So just to round out on Atlantic, they're looking to potentially move the mill up the road roughly 100 kilometres to the 15-mile stream asset, which is, yeah, like I said, just up the road there in eastern Canada.
So do you guys, question without notice, what did they pay for all these assets? Do you remember?
Atlantic was over $700 million for Atlantic.
Too much, mate.
Wow.
Too much.
And then Simberi, what do we know what that was?
I can dig it up, but yeah, they've been two pretty catastrophic M&A deals.
Wow, they're God, you could do an episode series on that. They'd be at the leaderboard, wouldn't they, for M&A?
They sure would.
Inversely.
So if you're trying to get comfortable with, you know, this as a potential investment, there'd be a few questions that come to mind. And some of the ones that come to mind for me are, if they are going to develop Simberi, what's the CapEx going to be on that? So that would be a few years down the track.
That's for the sulfide expansion, is it, JD?
Exactly. I've got no idea what we'd sort of be looking at down there. For Atlantic, that reclamation, that environmental bond that we touched on, that's now worth a bit over $90 million, but it sort of remains to be seen. They don't give much color on this. Like, could that become more of a liability? Can't really tell.
Interesting.
So the $90 million is just the amount of cash that's required to back it. The actual liability might be different. Yeah.
Yeah. And we don't really know. They've released the odd one-page announcement or half a page announcement on the bond over the past couple quarters. So sort of remains to be seen how to sort of value that. And perhaps that's a reason why investors are valuing it at nothing. And then you sort of, you get into the incentives around the management and the board. So they had an announcement about a week ago that the new board and management have come in, and there's a comment on incentives. And one of them stresses that the management has been incentivized to achieve milestones at Atlantic and Simberi expansion projects. So if final investment decision is only a few years away, I'd want to know a bit more on what the incentives are for this management team with regard to expanding Simberi. It's a bit of a question mark I have. Perhaps it's just additional oxide projects that they haven't explicitly named there, but I'd want to know, like, if you're going to incentivize the management to expand the thing, then that's what they're going to do. So,
as incentivizers in, mate, like possibly exploration, but to incentivize to explore and find other opportunities that aren't sulfidey or.
Yeah, perhaps that's it, but I'd want to know that you're not completely aligning the incentives to developing the sulfide asset before you've even made the final investment decision there.
God, you'd question their, you know, with the sulfide, like they bought the Bardoc assets, so Aphrodite, that's a sulfide, a refractory project. This one's got the refractory component. That's, God, what was in their head thinking they must have been able to process this sulfide, these sulfide ores? I don't know. I'd be questioning the DD that was the DD team that started doing these deals, that's for sure.
You would, wouldn't you? And then the big sort of elephant in the room, these guys now have $200 million in cash. Mm-hmm. So can the management be trusted to invest that better than the shareholders would themselves, you know? It's kind of somewhat similar to Metals X that we spoke about a couple of weeks ago.
Trav, as a shareholder, do you trust them?
No, I don't. I think it's good opportunity for activist shareholders in some way, shape or form to have an influence, right?
Maybe. Absolutely. And L1 is still on the register with almost 10%, and they're known to be pretty active. So it remains to be seen what they're going to do.
Yeah.
So there's a couple other thoughts that sort of come to mind about this company. It'd be kind of great to see management buy a bit of stock. You know, you don't always actually see that, but given that the new CEO has just been given 1 million shares, you know, prior to those 1 million shares being given, the directors amongst them had roughly 50 grand in stock. So
is that the outgoing directors or the incoming ones?
Not including the outgoing, that is all the other directors that are there.
Right. At the moment. Only 50 grand.
Yeah. Wow. So the outgoing CEO was given 300,000 shares on the 30th of June as a, you know, they called it onboarding, but that was his last day.
50,000 shares on his last day.
300,000 shares.
Sorry, 300,000 shares on his last day.
Yeah. So
well, like a going away present.
So when he signed up in November, he got given 500,000 shares to commence the job, and then on the 30th of July, it was June, it was scheduled that there'd be another 300,000 granted.
Oh, so that was in the initial onboarding.
Yeah. Yep.
Going away present, mate.
Yeah. So
wow. And you didn't get, you got paid pretty well over the months he was MD, didn't he? Or CEO?
Yeah, the pay wasn't too bad for a company that wasn't making money.
Mm.
And so
explore the fullness of offers available to them to get the best value for shareholders. Maybe if the bloody board owned more shares, they would have made better decisions for the shareholders.
Maybe. So they came up with this presentation last week when they were doing the roadshow of Melbourne and Sydney. And, you know, you've got multiple pages on Simbiri and Atlantic, but there's nothing really on the management. Now, given this has been a huge question mark around the company for the last like four bloody years, it's kind of interesting that they're not advertising, you know, new management in the house, new strategy and all of this and that. So
I'd be arguing that they can't fucking get anyone.
Yeah.
To be honest.
They did announce that at a board level, they've engaged a headhunter and they're looking to refresh the board. So remains to be seen.
Well, they got their bloody work cut out for them. They'll definitely earn that little sign-on fee.
Yeah. So it kind of makes me think of the discussion we had with Alan Trench about a month or so ago. And there was one thing that came to mind, and I know, Trav, you'd said something earlier as well. But for me, despite how sort of enticing the valuation could potentially look, I kind of keep thinking, you know, don't catch a falling knife. What sort of popped into your head?
Yeah. So JD brought this one to the table saying, is St. Barbara cheap? Like EV0, you know, like these assets surely worth something, right? Is it cheap? And he laid out this logic in the exact same way he has on the potty now, Matty. And I just thought, this reminds me of the Alan Trench five rules of investing. The one that it reminded me of though was don't try and be too smart. Because, you know, yeah, you can argue all of this sort of stuff. Yeah, like it must be worth something, blah, 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 deep value potential. But if you just zoom out, a company that has a history of making poor decisions, allocating the capital, management that you don't actually trust to make the right decisions for shareholders, how do you know you're actually going to be the beneficiary of the $200 million cash that they've got unless you had some activist capability?
But rewind, there was a lot of people that made shitloads of money out of St. Barbara when they caught the falling knife when they went down to below 10 cents, I think. And then it was after the whole Solomon issue and everything. And then they sold
them. A long while back.
It was probably 7-8 years ago maybe. So, and then they just dove. But they still had Gwalia. And once they got rid of it all, a lot of people bought in at sub 10 cents and then they went back up to $2. So yeah. there was one success story for a St. Barbara shareholders there, but very not many more.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple more things on St. Barbara. In the change in management notice, there was a hilariously ironic line. I'm not sure if you guys picked up on it, but there was the phrase that we've seen once before in quotation marks. It's great to hand over the keys at Gwalia to Genesis. Sort of reminded me of a LinkedIn post I saw once.
I reckon Dan's having a little dig there at Silver Lake.
Try to have the last laugh.
I thought that was pretty funny. And, so the thing I wanted to sort of round out on with you guys is, you know what, if we're so great, we're here, you know, behind a camera, you know, talking shit about all these companies, what would we do if
just
we were...
Just mainly this one.
Yeah. I'm not sure we speak too fondly of most companies, but what would we do, you know? What would you guys do? I've got a couple ideas. Obviously, one of them that springs to mind would be to distribute the cash.
Yeah.
So that would sort of come to mind if in some, you know, alternate universe we were running St. Barbara. How about you guys? Any ideas spring to mind?
Well, like, God, if they distributed the cash and there's more liabilities that just keep popping up with these overseas
You don't have to distribute all the cash. Mm.
Yeah, I would I'd go one step further, JD. I would restart the sale process on both Atlantic and Simbari and sell them for whatever you could, even if it meant you had to leave some cash in
just
the environmental
backing. Literally get them off your books.
Get rid of them. Yeah. Like, just get rid of them. They've been no good. They're, you know, like, they're just, you're in Australia, the assets are overseas. You don't have a competitive advantage running these. Like, you don't.
So the company actually tried to sell Simbiri, I know, in late 21, I think early 22, and they were, you know, not able to achieve an outcome there.
The difference here is maybe they're more forthcoming about keeping their cash behind the environmental bond. I get that. And who knows, maybe the market's different now. I'd just redo them, get rid of them both, whatever cash you've got, distribute it all of it to shareholders, distribute the shares that you do own in specie, distribute them to shareholders and wind yourself up.
And then just shut the door.
Shut the door.
Go away.
End the story of St. Barbara existing.
Because it's been nothing but heartache usually. So
that was a bit more extreme than I thought.
But it's bloody true. Like the amount of bloody shareholder losses from this company over the years has been nothing but disappointment with one and with such a, I know it's a deep ore body, but it was Gwalia is a good ore body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What so, yeah, the money miners do what that with you will. But
sort of laid out our thoughts.
But if you, okay, let's, two things I'll put to you. Like, this, let's talk about PNG. Like, is there potentially room for, if they're, like, look at what WAF have done in Africa, in Burkina Faso. Like, they've got, you know, good relationships. They've made it work. They're making good cash. Do you think there's.
Going to a, you know, quote unquote, third world country. It's all fine if the returns are there, but this is a high-cost asset. Yeah. So that's what springs to mind to that question.
Do you think there will be room for, like, PNG's got a lot of opportunity. So do you think there's room for a company one day to have, like, when they get in the district, good political relationships to really make a go of PNG? But it's, yeah, definitely, I can't see it anytime soon.
Yeah, and I mean,
but there's really definitely an opportunity.
Yeah, and it only works till the government changes and then.
Yeah, exactly. But do you think there's possibility if there was the right management team parachuted into this company with 200 million cash after all those payments that could possibly make something of St. Barbara if you had the right people doing it?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to attract talent into this vessel until those dog assets are gone.
Is there people that you could attract in to
maybe
get rid of them?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. But yeah, like it's like what it's just an inefficient structure to you know have a fund. If you know what I mean, $200 million of cash. It's like it's not like a tax effective or you know fee effective way of having a bloody unknown fund with no mandate of what they're going to do or how they're going to do it. I'll just give it back to me, please.
Should we put the hands up, boys? What do you reckon?
To run it.
Can't get any worse. I reckon we'd bloody, God, we'd have a crack.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we know people. We've got a good network now, boys. Got some good, we could get some good advisors, some good funds. Yeah. Oh, mate, tell you what, not the dumbest idea I've come up with.
True. Well, we'll see what the other money miners.
Money of mine are running St. Barbara. You heard it here first, possibly.
To wind it up. That's what we would do. The right thing.
Right, boys. Good work. Good work. Good deep dive. It's great.
Hey, guys.
And, sensational travel in the E25. A new frontier you've taken on there in the manganese knowledge. So, mate, good bloody stuff. Can't have JD taking all the credit for uranium and everything. He's flopped it out. He says, I'm the big dick in town today, boys.
Love it. Hootaroo, guys.
Hootaroo. Wrap it up, JD. Hootaroo.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation and needs.